Chapter 20. Under the direction of the archaeologists, the crew of the Polar Explorer cut their way down to the ice-locked ship, layer by layer, until the top deck was laid bare from bow stem to sternpost. Everyone in the fjord was drawn to the sight, hypnotized by curiosity. Only Pitt and Lily were missing. They remained on board the icebreaker to study the wax tablets. A compelling silence gripped the crowd of seamen and archaeologists, joined by the air crash investigating team, as they stood on the edge of the excavation. They stared down at the partially cleared vessel as though it were a hidden tomb of ancient royalty. Hoskins and Graham measured the hull, arriving at an overall length of just under 20 meters, with a beam of 7 meters. The mast had broken 2 meters above its step and was missing. The remains of the hemp rigging snaked over the weather deck and sides as if wadded up and dropped by a giant bird. A few shredded pieces of canvas were all that remained of the once broad, square sail. The deck planking was tested for strength and found to be as solid as the day the ship was launched from some long-forgotten Mediterranean shipyard. The artifacts strewn about the deck were photographed, tagged, and carefully lifted to the surface and carried to the Polar Explorer, where they were cleaned and catalogued. Then each object was stored in the ship's ice locker to prevent decay during the voyage to a nation that was not in existence when the old merchant vessel sailed on her final voyage. Grundquist, Hoskins, and Graham did not touch the collapsed deckhouse or enter the galley. Slowly, almost tenderly, the three of them lifted one end of the cargo hatch and propped it half open. Grundquist stretched out on his stomach and leaned his head and shoulders into the gap until his vision ranged beneath the deck beams. "Are they there?" Graham asked excitedly. "Are they as Pitt described them?" Grundquist stared at the ghastly white faces, the frozen, mask-like expressions. It seemed to him that if he scraped away the ice and shook them, their eyes would blink and they'd come alive. He hesitated before answering. The bright daylight above gave him a clear view of the entire hold, and he glimpsed two forms huddled together in the extreme angle of the bow that Pitt had missed. "They're just as Pitt described," he said soberly, "except for the dog and the girl." Pitt stood in the shelter of a deck crane and watched as Giordino jockeyed the Numa helicopter over the stern of the Polar Explorer. 15 seconds later, the landing skids kissed the painted bullseye on the deck. The turbine's shrill whine died away, and the rotor blades beat to a slow stop. The right-hand cockpit door opened, and a tall man wearing a green turtleneck sweater under a brown corduroy sport jacket jumped to the deck. He looked around for a moment as though getting his bearings, and then spied Pitt, who threw a wave of greeting. He walked swiftly, shoulders huddled, hands shoved deeply into pockets to shield them from the cold. Pitt stepped forward and quickly ushered the visitor through a hatch into the warmth of the ship. "Dr. Redfern?"
"You Dirk Pitt?"
"Yes, I'm Pitt.
I've read of your exploits.
Thank you for taking time from your busy schedule to come."
"Are you kidding?" blurted Redfern, eyes wide with enthusiasm. "I jumped at your invitation. There isn't an archaeologist in the world who wouldn't give an eye-tooth to be in on this find. When can I take a look?"
"Be dark in another 10 minutes. I think it will be practical if you're briefed by Dr. Grundquist, the archaeologist who supervised the excavation. He'll also show you the artifacts he's recovered off the main deck. Then, at first light, you set foot on the vessel and take charge of the project."
"Sounds good."
"Have any luggage?" Pitt asked.
"I traveled light, only a briefcase and a small tote bag."
"Al Giordino."
"The helicopter pilot?"
"Yes, Al will see that your gear is taken to your quarters. Now, if you'll follow me, I'll see you get something warm in your stomach and pick your brain on an intriguing puzzle."
"After you."
Dr. Mel Redfern towered over Pitt and had to duck halfway to his navel when he passed through a hatch. His blonde hair had receded to a widow's peak, and he wore designer glasses in front of gray-blue eyes. His long body was still reasonably trim for a man of 40, with a slight but noticeable paunch. A former college basketball star who passed on playing for the pros to earn his doctorate in anthropology, Redfern later turned his considerable talents to underwater exploration and became one of the world's leading experts in classical marine archaeology.
"Did you have a good flight from Athens to Reykjavik?" asked Pitt.
"Slept through most of that one," answered Redfern.
It was the ride in the Navy patrol plane from Iceland to the Eskimo settlement 100 miles to the south of here that damn near turned me into an ice cube. I hope I can borrow some cold-weather clothing. I packed for the sunny islands of Greece and didn't plan for a rush trip to the Arctic Circle. Commander Knight, the ship's skipper, can fix you up. What were you working on? A 2nd century B.C. Greek merchant ship that sank with a cargo of marble sculptures. Redfern could not contain his curiosity and began to grill Pitt. You didn't state in your radio message what the ship was carrying. Except for the bodies of the crew, I found the cargo hold empty. Can't have it all your way, Redfern said philosophically. But you did say the ship was basically intact. Yes, that's true. If we repair a hole in the hull, restore the mast and the rigging, and hang new steering oars, you could sail her into New York Harbor. God, that's astounding. Has Dr. Grundquist been able to determine an approximate date on her? Yes, by coins minted around A.D. 390. We even know her name, Serapis. It was carved in Greek on the sternpost. A completely preserved 4th-century Byzantine merchant ship, Redfern murmured in wonder. This has to be the archaeological find of the century. I can't wait to lay my hands on her. Pitt led him to the officer's wardroom, where Lily sat at a dining table, copying the wording from the wax tablets onto paper. Pitt made the introductions. Dr. Lily Sharp, Dr. Mel Redfern. Lily rose and extended her hand. This is an honor, Doctor. Although my field is land science, I've been a fan of your underwater work since grad school. The honor is mine, said Redfern politely. Let's cut the fancy titles and stick with first names. What can we get you? Asked Pitt. A gallon of hot chocolate and a bowl of soup should thaw me out just fine. Pitt relayed the order to a steward. Well, where's this puzzle you mentioned? Asked Redfern with the anxiousness of a kid leaping out of bed on Christmas Day. Pitt stared at him and smiled. How's your Latin, Mel? Passable. I thought you said the ship was Greek. It is, answered Lily. But the captain wrote out his log on wax tablets in Latin. 6 were inscribed with wording. The 7th has lines like a map. Dirk recovered them during his initial entry into the ship. I've transposed the writing into more readable form on paper so it can be run off on a copy machine. I drew an enlarged scale of the tablet depicting a chart of some kind. So far, we haven't been able to pin down a geographical location because it lacks labels. Redfern sat down and held one of the tablets in his hand. He studied it almost reverently for several moments before setting it aside. Then he picked up Lily's pages and began to read. The steward brought a mug of hot chocolate and a large bowl of Boston clam chowder. Redfern became so engrossed in the translation that he lost his appetite. Like a robot, he raised the cup and sipped the chocolate without taking his eyes from the handwritten pages. After nearly 10 minutes, he stood up and paced the deck between the officers' dining tables, muttering Latin phrases to himself, oblivious to his rapt audience. Pitt and Lily sat in utter silence, careful not to interrupt his thoughts, curiously watching his reactions. Redfern stopped as if mentally placing a problem into proper perspective. He returned to the table and examined the pages again. The air fairly crackled with expectancy. Several more minutes dragged by before Redfern finally laid the pages on the table with trembling hands. Then he stared vacantly into the distance, his eyes strangely blurred. Redfern had been rocked right down to his toenails. "You look like you just found the Holy Grail," said Pitt. "What is it?" asked Lily. "What did you find?" They could barely hear Redfern's answer. His head was down. He said, "It's possible, just possible, your chance discovery may unlock the door to the greatest collection of art and literary treasures the world has ever known."